Good evening. I am Josh Spicer from Game Wisdom, and welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. We got a great cast for you tonight. My guest tonight is the game designer for Colossal Order. This is a developer who specializes in city-building games, and they just released the incredibly successful Cities Skylines, which is not only the best-selling game currently from the studio, but one of the best-selling games in the city-building genre. And it's a pleasure to have her on tonight. So please welcome to the cast, Carolina Corpro. And I'm going to probably let her pronounce her last name better, because I think I may have just butchered it a little bit.
So, hello. I'm Carolina Corpro, as we say it in Finland, but it's a different country here. So all kinds of pronunciations are welcome. So it's so nice to be with you tonight.
Yep, it's a pleasure to have you on, Carolina. We've spoken with several developers internationally. It's always great to be able to reach out to new companies and new developers and talk with them about game development. So the first thing then, as I just said, definitely congratulations for you and the rest of Colossal Order on the success of City Skylines.
Thank you.
It's going to be, I think, a very interesting game to talk about tonight and one to look at over the coming months and maybe even coming year or so, as you guys continue to work on it and expand.
We kind of, with the previous games, they haven't been nearly this big, and we kind of knew it at the time, because public transportation is just not as sexy as city building, but it still took us by surprise how well received Skylines was.
Yeah. Now, I remember seeing a news piece. How long did it take for the game to sell a million copies?
5 weeks. A little over 5 weeks. So it's quite good.
Yeah, definitely impressive. Especially, as you said, coming off of the previous Cities in Motion series that didn't sell as well, wasn't as well known. And then to have City Skylines be the success, especially following the wake of SimCity 5 not doing so well.
Mm. Yeah, and there was also the Cities XXL. That released just before we did. I think it was like a month before. I think they were aiming to just get the game out just before we did. But sadly for them and luckily for us, the product wasn't up to the expectations. So I think it even may have guided quite a lot of more attention towards our game.
Yeah. And we definitely have a lot to talk about with City Skylines tonight. But first, for people who may not heard of City Skylines or Colossal Order, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, Carolina, and about Colossal Order's background in the game industry?
Yeah. So I'm working at Colossal as a game designer. I've been the design lead on all of the titles we have done, both Cities in Motion and then Skylines now. I've been with the company for 4 years now, a little bit over, coming to five. But my background is in graphics, actually. I'm a trained graphic designer, and I started in the games industry as a QA engineer, actually, 8 years ago. So quite a long time ago. And back then, when I was doing the testing job, it was actually before iPhones came. And I was working for a mobile games company, so we had like 500 different mobile phones that we had to test the games on, and it was quite a different world back then. But then I continued with the graphics design and did that for a few years, and then found my calling in game design and got to work with Colossal. So I think even now you can't really study game design in Finland anywhere, so it's kind of all of us game designers are something else first and then just end up being designers.
Interesting. I was about to ask you, Carolina, about the state of the game industry in Finland, because again, because we talked with a lot of international developers, it's interesting to hear how the industry has taken root in these different countries.
Well, I think actually Colossal Order's story is a great way to also talk about the game industry in Finland, because the way many of the games companies in the city I'm based in Tampere, mm-hmm. have been started is that back when I was in the testing job, there was this one huge mobile studio in Tampere that employed like 40 people, mm-hmm. and that was kind of that was the biggest employer in the games industry in the whole city. So when THQ bought the studio and had it for like half a year and then suddenly decided that they don't actually need a mobile studio anymore, they closed down the whole place. So that meant that suddenly we had like 40 people with experience in game design and game development, and they had no job. Mm-hmm. So what games industry people do is that they create new companies and kind of form these small teams and start working on their dream projects. And Colossal was one of the companies that kind of was founded this way, that some people who were left without a job decided that this is their chance. They will now make the games that they actually wanted to make instead of the mobile Java games that were kind of the thing back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also with Colossal, kind of the idea has been from the start to aim for a city builder game. So even when the studio was founded in 2009, it was kind of the dream project to have. So, but since we kind of knew that going straight to the city builder, mm-hmm. kind of genre would have been maybe too much for us, because kind of we had a new team and didn't really know each other that well, and kind of we had to test that the whole team works and how things actually really work with PC game development. Mm-hmm. So we decided to first do something that kind of helps us to get to the level that city builders need, and that's how public transportation games were kind of the way for us, because traffic is the end game content for most city builders. So working on games that really need to focus on traffic is a great way to prepare.
Cool. And I'm glad you brought up Colossal's interest in the city building genre, Carolina, because that was going to be one of my next questions. Mm-hmm. And for those of you currently listening to the cast, I am going to be expanding on several of the questions that I spoke with Carolina about on my email interview. And if you didn't read that, there will be a link to it in the podcast notes below. So, as you just said, Carolina, Colossal Order really, when it was founded, had that focus in the city building genre. Mm. Now, for you, I know I asked this question on our interview, but if you could expand on it, I guess what attracted you to working on the city builder genre as opposed to other genres in the market?
Well, it's kind of as simulation games go, the city simulation ones are kind of it's kind of the king of the simulation genre. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of simulations, like starting from the really small ones that the Germans love. They have all of these like airport fire truck simulators and whatever. And those are kind of, there is an audience for those really tiny simulation games that focus on one small portion of some bigger system. Mm-hmm. But city builders are kind of the really large scale, but they have this sort of charm that everyone knows what happens in cities and kind of has some kind of a connection. And it's a nice environment to have a game in, because people have this kind of expectations of what could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the genre has been around for a long time, at least in my memory, the last 20 or so years, starting with the big developer would probably be the Impressions City Builder series back during the 90s. I think they lasted to just about the early 2000s before they split and went to Tilted Mill. When you were growing up, or when you were looking at city building games, did you play any of the Impressions era style ones?
So those are the Impressions.
That would be
the Caesars and yes. those kind of the Sierra City Builder. Yeah, I really loved those. I had all of the Caesars and then the Pharaoh one, mm-hmm. and then there was the ancient Chinese one. I can't even remember the name, but
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on that one. I think that's the only one that I didn't own. I own the Caesar, Pharaoh, Zeus. Yeah.
And the Chinese one had kind of, there was something in the economy or the chains that didn't make as much sense as the other ones. But I love the Pharaoh one because it had the annual floods of the Nile. Mm-hmm. And that was just the most interesting part was to see if the last kind of the farmer dude pushing the cart, if he made it out of the flood area in time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love those games. And it's kind of, it's still that those are kind of the, those are the different type of city builders.
Yeah.
We kind of jokingly call them the communistic ones because kind of the player holds all of the tools, all of the industry, they mm-hmm. place each building and kind of they have all of the natural resources. So it's something that we were looking at when we were starting with Skylines, but it felt like a modern city couldn't really be simulated kind of credibly with that kind of system.
Yeah.
Although, and it seems to work with like smaller cities better. So for kind of the ancient cities, it felt natural that you would place each house and kind of the smaller scale worked really well with those. But if we want to have a city of 1 million inhabitants, then placing each apartment house might become a task. Mm-hmm. That's not so much fun.
Yeah. When I spoke with Chris Beatrice, the lead designer on those games a few years ago, mm-hmm. he talked about the difference in the walker system or the agent system of how to abstract out the services.
Oh, yeah.
And he came up with two differing philosophies, either a push or pull system. Mm. A push system means that the service or the utility building essentially pushes out the service. And that's when you see like the fireman walking the street or the market person walking the street. And that's supposed to abstract out the concept of that service reaching the house. And as you said, Carolina, while it works great for like the ancient city builders or the very small scale ones, it's just not realistic or doesn't really make sense if you're dealing with a city of millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
And then,
and it also kind of comes down to the traffic aspect. So if the streets actually have a capacity and the services kind of need to get to move around the city, it mm-hmm. might become a problem. Or that's, well, it has to be a part of the game to actually make sure that the service people get around the city.
Mm-hmm. And that's where he talked about the pool system is when the utility buildings will quote-unquote pool the agents to their respective buildings. So if someone needs to go to the shop, you actually see that person or representation of that person go to that shop, and it's not locked to the abstraction of the utility buildings. Now, obviously, that's a lot more realistic, but when he mm-hmm. talked about this 2-3 years ago, he said that kind of simulation model is also very much demanding. Because you have to simulate that for, you know, the hundreds of thousands or even millions of citizens currently in your city.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of, I think that's where maybe EA and Maxis made an interesting choice. Because their agent or the Glassbox engine really doesn't work with agents the same way as the previous mm-hmm. SimCities do. So it's I would say that it's a really interesting choice because I kind of like the system that everything flows through the road. It's really elegant and nicely kind of flowing. But mm-hmm. For people who actually want to see what's going on in the city and they have this, the player has this long time to actually wait for something to happen, mm-hmm. like to gain money or that people flow into the city, and they need something to look at. And if there is nothing really meaningful happening in the city, it's really hard to keep people entertained mm-hmm. during those waiting phases.
Yeah. And before we talk a little bit more about the city building design, I just want to go back to what you said a few minutes ago, Carolina, about the hook or the attraction of the city building genre, and how you said that it is sort of the perfect or the highest form of the simulation. And I think that's a good explanation for why a lot of people do enjoy that. For me, one of the things I like about the city building genre is that level of control, that ability to see all the moving parts of your city coalesce together into one thing. And I think when I saw it with Chris Beatrice, I sort of liken that to how a lot of people like model trains or building like those models and just essentially setting this thing up and then watching how everything works and how everything flows together.
Yeah, and it's also, I think it's kind of self-expression that people can express themselves through playing a game. It's like they make the city that they want to make. Mm-hmm. And there are certain systems, of course, like rules in the game that have to be there to actually have meaningful play. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to creating something and then seeing how it works. And when you do it with your own hands, it has this new kind of level of commitment, and you feel it's your work and you want to see how it works.
Yep, definitely. And you can really see that in City Skylines, not just with how people are developing their cities using the tools that you guys put in, but also with the modding community and the Steam Workshop integration. We've seen a lot of people really expand on what Colossal's doing in terms of various models or buildings, tools, etc. And as we said at the beginning of this cast, the community has really taken to City Skylines, and they really are supporting you guys with a lot of great content and a lot of great ways to really personalize how you would build your city.
Yeah, what we really felt that opening the game for modding is really important and even essential in this kind of a game that that's about what people can do and how they can enjoy themselves while kind of playing in this huge sandbox kind of environment. So and the modding support seems to have paid off really well, because what we had planned was that we would first make a few tools for the modders so that they could start out with something, and then we could expand and make more tools for them when they kind of can ask for something, when they understand what they would need. But so far people have been so creative and so talented that they have been able to make almost anything with the modding API. So it looks like we don't even need to make any more tools for them. They have taken the game and ran with it. So that's great.
Yeah. Now, with you and the rest of the team at Colossal, are there any modders or mods in specific that have really impressed you with just the level of commitment they're showing to cities?
Well, one thing that I personally liked was that people were kind of... as when the game was released, there were a few bugs and kind of these oversights in design or some small things that kind of... hindered the player. So the modders really took to these and kind of made fixes that were there from day one, because we can't release anything that fast. We have to put it through testing and all of this. So it was really great that I was able to actually guide the players that if you want something that fixes this immediately, try this mod, and we are looking into the issue and it will be fixed, and we did fix it. But having these kind of helping hands that if someone is really frustrated with a feature that's lacking, they can just download the mod and it's working much better already.
Yeah.
But I also love the flight simulator. It's not really something that you can actually do anything with, but you can just play around, and it's so nice to just fly around the city and see what's happening.
Yeah. And again, as you said, it's impressive just to see how much creativity the modders and the fan base is putting into their creations for cities. Now, just a quick, like, general, like, technical question for you. I'm not sure if you'd be the right person to ask this, but in terms of integrating Steam Workshop into City Skylines, was it like an easy process, a difficult process? I'm just asking for any enthusiasts or developers listening who are also looking at workshop functionality for their game.
Well, the programming side has naturally been doing the most work with this, but it wasn't too hard because they didn't complain much. So I would say that it was okay. And we have had Steam integration with the previous game, so like the normal Steam stuff was familiar to us, and Workshop was really kind of it was something that was perfect for our game, because this way we don't have to even, because it would be impossible for us to go through all of the 30,000 or so mods and additions. Mm-hmm. And this way the players can just vote them and report if something is not working. So it's so good to involve the community in managing all of this extra content.
Okay. I think I just have a few more general like industry and city building related questions, and then we'll start talking a little bit more in depth about the design and then go into city skylines from there. As we've talked over this cast, you guys really hit out of the park with cities, especially in terms of the state of the city building genre. As I said in our interview, it's definitely not as big as it was a few years ago, partly due to not as many games coming out, and as we talked about with SimCity 5, not exactly succeeding in terms of revitalizing things. And this is another one of the questions I asked you during our interview, and I just want to see if you could expand on this. What is keeping Colossal Order, I guess, invested in the city-building genre, where most developers have moved away or have, you know, gone completely different directions with it?
Well, I think because most of our team has played the old SimCities and all of these old city building games, and we still saw that there is something that our team can really kind of give to this genre, because it's something that we tried to do also with the Cities in Motions, and somehow kind of succeeded, that we take something that has been previously done, an old game that has this kind of some kind of a coil that keeps pulling people in, some kind of a charm that you can't really explain why it's so much fun. And we try to isolate that part and then modernize the rest and add some of our own ideas. And that's kind of because some designers are really interested in creating like whole new things. Mm-hmm. But I personally think that if I would have to reinvent the wheel every time I want to go out and bike somewhere. So it's kind of that we have to build on the old stuff. Something that has been done nicely can be expanded and even made better. And this is the only way to actually get great games, if you take the old ones and kind of combine them creatively and sort of find new ways to do the same things that have been tried before.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very interesting point, Caroline, about integrating or iterating on classic game designs to modernize the best parts of them. Because we're definitely seeing a resurgence of that type of philosophy, in the indie market, especially in the crowdfunding Kickstarter space, with a lot of developers really pitching these classic ideas, saying, I want to take this idea and I want to make this, you know, modern. I want to use all the bells and whistles using all today's design philosophies, but still capture this great design from 10, 15 years ago that attracted fans in the first place.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's part of the phenomenon is like that the games I played when I was growing up, those are the ones that are kind of making the comeback now. So kind of my people of my age kind of remember back on this magical childhood teen years games, and this is something that until recently has not been kind of present in the same way in the published games. So much has been done kind of creating new kinds of games and coming up with new inventions on kind of a new game systems and all. But there's something that kind of is nostalgic about the older ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with the city building genre, because as we've talked about, a lot of the best games or the most well-known games of the genre did come out during the 90s. The Impressions era style games, and those types of games have really all but disappeared for the most part, at least in terms of modern audiences. As you said, a lot of the modern city builders are really essentially trying to break new ground with completely different designs, completely different mechanics, and it's kind of hard to see the DNA of the older games in those titles.
Mm. Yeah, and sometimes at least I love the game called Banished that came out a few years ago, but that seemed to have the problem that there was this kind of nice system of how the world works, but there wasn't that much actual kind of playable content. So once you knew how to actually not make your citizens die, then that's the same thing that you do over and over again. Yeah. And for me, that was not rewarding after like the first playthrough. So so kind of even if there is this kind of one small portion of the old game kind of polished to perfection, it might not be enough for nowadays kind of expectation.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up Banished, Carolina, because that was a game that I sort of tried to get into, but as you said, it felt less like a city builder and more like a puzzle or a strategy game where you were just trying to min-max the best way to get your citizens to survive, and then that was it. There was no future growth. There was no other ways to personalize or customize how your citizens or how your little village would grow from there.
Yeah, it seemed like there was one solution for the whole game. Yeah. Of course, I have the utmost respect for Banished because it was basically made by one guy, if I understood correctly. So having that much content with only one person doing the game is an awesome feat. But still, for a player, it's kind of that it's a one-trick pony. Once you learn how the game works, then that's what you do, and there is not much more. And like you said, it's kind of a puzzle. You have to find the right combination, and then things work.
Yeah.
But it's like with Skylines, we wanted the absolute opposite. So there is no right or wrong way to play the game. There is some rules, like you have to have electricity, or you need water for your citizens. But kind of after that, it's a sandbox. You can choose what kind of a city you want to create and make different maps and kind of just choose how to play the game. And it's we put a lot of effort into making the game scale with the skill level of the player. So if someone is really, really experienced and really skilled at playing city builders, they unlock all of the services in a short time, and then they continue to making the city that they want to make. But if someone is not as skilled, the game tries its best to kind of stop the person from failing too hard, and tries to make this it happen so that they get one service at a time, or maybe two. And once those have been mastered, only then the player will get more services unlocked. So it isn't like you get your first house and then immediately they want 10 different things, and you don't even know how to build the first one. So I think it's working quite nicely to scale to the skill level, because that's something that really creates the experiences that you have learned something, you can play the game, you can succeed.
Yeah, and the progression model for, say, Skylines, as you said, Caroline, is really interesting about appealing to these different skill levels. Because, as you said, someone who is great at, say, building, they're just going to quickly, you know, ramp up their population. They're going to quickly get up those levels, unlock all those services. But for someone new starting out, they can basically, you know, stick their toe into the water, in a manner of speaking, and slowly build things up, you know, not go too quickly before they start unlocking new services, new features, and etc.
Yeah, and this also works for kind of different paces for playing, because some people want to concentrate mainly just on the game and play as fast and as good as they can, and some people like to have it running in the background and do something else at the same time, and then occasionally come back to the city to see what's going on, and the game kind of it supports both of these styles, and that's what we wanted it to do, so that there is many ways to play it, and it sort of adjusts to what the player wants to do.
All right, before we get more detail about the city building genre and, say, Skylines, I have just one last general industry question for you, Carolina, and then we'll move on. And I know a few minutes ago you mentioned Banish as a recent example of a city builder that you liked, but you had some reservations on. And I was just wondering, are there any other modern city-building style games that you particularly enjoyed or even helped inspire you while you were working on Skylines?
Well, we wanted to kind of go with the older ones.
Mm-hmm.
So even with Skylines, I've been mostly playing the older games for inspiration. Mm-hmm. So I have to say that there really isn't that many. I can't think of any other like modern city building games. I didn't like Goddess. Mm-hmm. That was Molyneux's this newest project. It's not really city building. It's a god game,
mm-hmm.
but it sort of has the same kind of ideas that you have land and you expand on it and then you take care of your tiny citizens or what they're called, worshippers.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some elements that I found really kind of that can apply to Skylines as well, like the expanding of the map. That's something that's hugely rewarding for me as a player. And I felt that it could be for other players too.
All right. It's been a great discussion so far, Carolina. And I believe we can now move on and talk a little bit more about city building design in general. And that'll pretty much just segue right into talking about Skylines, which we've been doing over the last half hour and so.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the city building genre, as we said, one of the more fascinating elements of it is that it really is that big or very perfect simulation model, because you're trying to get all these different aspects of a city into one single title. I know you mentioned, of course, you know, the airport simulator, farm simulator, those types of games.
Oh, yeah.
As like the smaller versions of that. So my first question for this topic, Carolina, is, this is another one of the questions I asked you in the interview, but I'm just really curious about, especially coming in from the outside at the genre, and that is, how do you start building a city builder? What is there like a general framework or guidelines that you and your team use to sort of build this game up from the ground up?
Well, what we do when we have a project starting is that we have meetings until we know what's the core of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we list down these features that we feel that are the key features. And then those will be actually numbered, and we will divide them to different steps. And this will be, of course, if working with a publisher, we will discuss with them that what they need to see first, if they have some kind of things that they are really interested in. Kind of, if they need a proof of concept first, then we will start with something that might not be really the core of the game, but it's something that needs to be proven to go ahead with the project.
Mm-hmm.
But at least with Skylines, we kind of came down to the realization that we have to start with the road system and the zoning, because kind of these are the tools that the player will be using the most.
Mm-hmm.
So we started with those and wanted to polish them so that they work really, really well, and then expanded on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the road systems and the traffic, this obviously goes back to you and your team's experience with the Cities in Motion series. Mm-hmm. I know you said a few minutes ago that when the studio was first opened in 2009, you guys really wanted to make a city builder, but you wanted to basically get some experience first with building the different tools, building the different systems first. And that's how you guys really got into specializing with the traffic model, the traffic simulation, and that sort of lend itself into building up your city in Skylines.
Mm. Yeah, because when looking at city building games in general, if there are roads that have a capacity, mm-hmm. that basically need to be that way if you have a modern city. So if we have the ancient Roman city, it's okay that you can have as many people on the roads as needed, because it doesn't look so weird and the scale is so much smaller. But if you have the kind of modern day big city, you need to have a capacity on the roads, and that means that managing the roads and kind of handling the traffic will be the end game content, because there simply isn't that many other features that can be as intense in the late stages of the game. So it's kind of looping in the end game. It's looping that you have problems or you want to expand, and then you need to handle the traffic and all of the changes that come with the expanding city or the changes that were made in the traffic system. Mm-hmm. So if when anything changes in the city, it will kind of start this chain reaction, and this creates stuff to actually do in the city.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of the traffic model, the traffic simulation in City Skylines, one part that I'm curious about, in terms of representing the various cars, trucks, etc. on the road, does the game generate traffic based on, like, I don't think it's one building per car, right? Is there, like, a deeper level of how the game represents how much traffic is actually being shown on your roads at any given time?
Well, it is... each of the vehicles on the road is actually doing something. It's mm-hmm. going somewhere, or it's representing something.
Okay.
And for example, if you have industry area, the industry buildings will need raw materials to actually produce the goods that they are making. So this means that occasionally a car will come into the city and try to get to the industry building when they are running out of the raw material.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the main cause of traffic jams in the game, when there is industry area, and sometimes people even build it so that all of the traffic goes through the residential areas, and this is bad.
Yes.
Because then you will have the endless truck rally going through the residential areas, creating noise pollution.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, all of the vehicles are doing something. Okay. What we did to kind of cut down on the amount of vehicles, because we can only simulate 64,000 vehicles or kind of individuals
mm-hmm.
on the streets at one time. So even if the city has like a million people, mm-hmm. only 64,000 can be outside at the same time.
Okay.
Because otherwise the computers would burst into flames.
Yeah.
So we had to have a limit. But kind of... the people who work in the industry or anywhere, the citizens, they don't actually need to go to the workplaces.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that we decided, because if you have a million people and all of them would have to make their way to the workplaces at some point, mm-hmm. that would mean a huge amount of traffic.
Yeah.
And we wanted to concentrate more on the raw material transportation, because it felt more logical and something that the player can really affect. So it would create some meaningful choices. And if we would have had the system that all of the workers have to go to the workplaces, it would have also meant that just if the limit of the vehicles becomes full, there is really nothing the player can do about it. And that would have been a really sucky way to do it, so that, like, well, you can't have any more cars on the road, and that's why your workers cannot go to work, and then you get some negative effects. So we just chose that the workers don't have to get to the workplaces. They will occasionally go to them if there is kind of room on the streets. So it's a location that the citizens want to travel to, but if they can't for some reason, that's okay. It doesn't cause any catastrophes.
Interesting. And does that model of the limitation of citizens on the out also apply to pedestrians? Like if you set up pedestrian walkways or subway stations and stuff like that?
Well, yeah. The people can, or a lot more of the 64,000 are pedestrians, because those really make the city seem really alive. So we wanted to have a lot of people moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And the citizens just have this model of how they choose the location they want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it does affect something. Like if the people are going to parks, they actually get some kind of a boost from visiting the location. And it's done so that they have kind of probabilities of possible kind of locations to visit. So for an adult citizen, the number one would be the workplace. So if they can check and they see that there is room to go out, they will. And then they will choose the location and try to travel there and then return home afterwards.
Okay. Now, another part of the city building design, especially with City Skylines, is the agent system for how services move around and how services are represented. And I have a somewhat good understanding of the system, but from your perspective as the game designer on it, and for enthusiasts and possibly students listening, when we are referring to agents when discussing the city building genre or city building design, what are they?
Well, moving agents in the city. So something that moves and has an effect.
Okay. All right, and that can be anything from the fire trucks from the station to providing services and whatever. And as we talked about with the older city building genre, the agent system was very much abstracted and in your face with how, you know, the different people, the different service people were basically moving around, and that was essentially your agent system.
Yeah. We kind of, with Skylines, we have this sort of combination going. Mm-hmm. So if you have a hospital in the city, mm-hmm. they have ambulances picking up sick people, but some also come to visit the hospital. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of it's a safety system. So if all the ambulances are gone, there is still a possibility for people to come in to the hospital.
Yeah. Now, as we talked about a few minutes ago, we're sort of building up a city building or building up city skylines from the start. In terms of the agents and the simulation model, how early in the development did your team settle on that? And were there any other different models you guys were experimenting with that were eventually set aside in favor of this one?
Well, from the start, we knew that we wanted to have citizens that actually have a name and a home mm-hmm. and a workplace that are kind of permanent, so that they don't just vanish or change whenever. Mm-hmm. Because following the individual citizens is something that's really rewarding to the player. And it's one of those things that you can't really explain. Like, if you try to tell someone that I'm looking at this small pixel dude and it's so much fun, mm-hmm. they are like, why? And you can't explain it. But it's really a big part of the charm that the city building games have, that you have a city and it's alive and there are individuals who do their own thing in the city, and you are kind of the guard or the mayor or someone who looks from above and can have an effect on the lives of the small people. Mm-hmm. So this was a clear choice for us from the beginning, that we will have citizens who actually have some attributes that are permanent. Mm-hmm. And for the service systems that use agents, that was kind of that we tried to choose a system that would work for each of the services and kind of modified it a bit. So there are kind of these not so realistic systems, like the police cars are technically going around collecting the crime percent from the houses, which sounds really silly, but it looks decent and kind of feels realistic and easy to understand to the player, that mm-hmm. if a police car drives past the house, then the possibility of a crime happening kind of lowers. Mm-hmm. And it was just the easiest and most logical way to do it was so that they kind of generate this stuff, and the car collects it, and when it becomes full, that's the end of the shift, then it returns to the police station.
Okay. Now, we mentioned a few minutes ago regarding the progression model of City Skylines and how the greater your population gets, the more services and features are unlocked. In terms of setting up this progression model, were there any elements or layers of progression that your team decided to stop at, or that you felt that it was just too big or too much to put into the initial version of Skylines?
We do have a long wish list, because we had 2 years to make the game, and in 2 years you can't really make everything you want mm-hmm. for a PC game, because it's a huge project. Mm-hmm. But we did all of the things that we had planned to make, except for the tunnels, which are coming in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of we had made a schedule and we stayed with it, and that's great for us, because we don't want to stay up all night working at the office. We want to make the stuff that we promised and make it as well as we could. Mm-hmm. So there were stuff that we had to really iterate on and tweak. Like, for example, the whole milestone system was originally so that all of the population milestones were like 10 times what they are now. Mm-hmm. But when we tested it, it felt just kind of, it was too boring for the skilled people. So they had to wait for a long time to actually get something done. And also for the not so skilled players, they didn't kind of get the reward for learning the system. Mm-hmm. And it took too long. So we just basically were looking at how the milestones should work. And I decided that, well, let's take 1-0 from the end of each one and try how it works. And suddenly it was great. So it's much about kind of tweaking and iterating and trying to find the perfect balance. Mm-hmm. But there was actually this one kind of interesting phase in the testing, because the way we did the early testing was that our producer, our publisher in Sweden, Paradox Interactive, mm-hmm. they kind of they have their own QA department. So what they did was they tried to find players who had previous knowledge of city builder games, mm-hmm. and then have those people play the game and send us videos of how well they did. And the QA was really concerned of how badly the guys were doing at the game. And when I looked at the videos, I was also totally lost. Like, if these are the city builder gamers and they have played SimCity, and how can't they understand how this game works? And like many people were kind of thinking of why can't I place a residential building, and what's this kind of a zoning tool? And they just didn't understand. But then it suddenly dawned on me that I hadn't kind of explained to the QA department that there are two kinds of city building games. So they hadn't kind of just, they hadn't noticed that there is two types. They had just asked the testing people to find people that have played city builders. Mm-hmm. So then they had a mix of SimCity players and then the sort of historical city builder game players, and those are only different systems.
Yeah.
So then it looked really confusing when suddenly it seemed that we had these experienced players who didn't know how to play our game, and people were kind of scared that is there something wrong with the game. Mm-hmm. But once we just had the testing department ask if they had played SimCity, then we suddenly got the right testing people to play the game, and they knew just how it worked, and then things were good.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to go back to what you were just talking about a second regarding the milestones and fine-tuning them, because that leads into another question I want to ask you about, Carolina, and that is the fine-tuning or the balancing of the various systems of City Skylines. In terms of balancing out, you know, the costs or the production of certain utility buildings, how much income comes in, stuff like that, was there any philosophy or guidelines you and your team use in terms of balancing out essentially how fast or how easy it is to build your city up?
Well, it comes down to that we wanted to make the game work for different players. So we didn't have this kind of normal player that we designed the game for. Mm-hmm. And in each phase, we tried to think of different player types, like the not-so-skilled one and then the super expert who instantly knows all of the stuff, and kind of if people want to play it slow or fast. So our system was just so that we did a lot of testing whenever we could and tried to make sure that if someone was not playing the game as expected and was kind of having trouble, we tried to make it so that their playing style would be included in the game. So that the solution wasn't always to guide the player towards the way we had planned for the game to be played, but rather to kind of include all of the different playing styles that we found during the testing.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of balancing. And I would say it came down to intuition and kind of guesses to what would be good. And there was still a small problem that the crime rate doesn't rise really high. and it's kind of tied to so many different systems that we haven't been able to come up with a solution yet. Mm-hmm. But it's a minor thing because people can play it. The only way it shows is that the hardest Steam achievement to get is the one where you have to have a really high frame rate. All of the others are really kind of, many players have gotten all of the other achievements, but this one was like 0.2% of players have gotten it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it creates new challenges for playing the game.
And also, as someone who likes to get their city up and make sure everything's perfect, it's hard to just sit there and not build any police station and just like let your city fall in that one particular area.
Yeah, and that's kind of, that was one thing that we did with, we have these unique buildings that are kind of the in-game achievements. Mm-hmm. And we made one of the, because they lead to these huge monuments that give wonders, powers to the city, but we had one unique building tree that leads up to the medical center, and that's kind of the for the evil players. So all of the achievements for that one are kind of like have the worst city ever, and I think it only shows that that's not how many players play the game. Mm-hmm. But to kind of make it interesting to more people, we did it so that the unique buildings carry over to next sessions. So you could just have one city that's like the one where you do all of the evil stuff, and then you can still use the achievements you gain in other cities that are the ones that you only like and want to make good.
And another part that I found really interesting about City Skylines I wanted to touch on during our podcast is definitely the UI for the game. And how well it is at providing the player with the various feedbacks of how their city is doing. In terms of creating this UI, what was like the general process of, I guess, setting this up so that it does allow both new and extra players to get the information that they need?
Well, the UI was really a big challenge for us because with the cities in motions, mm-hmm. they are really technical and kind of the players who like public transportation were okay with this a bit clumsy UI system. Mm-hmm. So for Skylines, we had to do something totally different. We actually hired a new person to work on the UI, and that really helped a lot because he's really skilled with those kind of things. And mainly we relied on his expertise to kind of decide what works, because we knew that none of us others really had talent in that area, so we decided to stick with the one person who we knew that actually knew how to make good UI mm-hmm. stuff. So looking at games that did it well, like the newest SimCity did have quite a nice UI, mm-hmm. Even though there were other problems with the game, but the UI was really nice. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we really kind of tried to learn from. And just generally having things really sleek and as exposed as can be, and avoiding things like long lists of numbers or these kind of things that really can put off some players.
Yeah, you definitely need that graphical side of the UI just so that someone can see quickly how their city is doing. And you say if you just overwhelm the player with numbers and percentages, you know, their eyes are just going to gloss right over. They won't be able to really process that.
Yeah. And if you have numbers like there is 10 dead people in the city, there is no way for the new player to actually know that is this a good number or is it bad or how much is it and what should be done. So showing it visually in some ways is the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about that, in terms of just overall UI design, we just touched on having graphical or visual displays as a good example of a UI. Are there any other examples or philosophies that, in your opinion, you think make up a great UI for any designers listening, either for city building games in general or just, you know, general game design?
Well, that's a hard question. There was something that I really like about like tech trees and skill trees, mm-hmm. because we don't have any in the game, but I've been working with some. I can't say more about that. Mm-hmm. But I played a lot of Diablo 2 when it mm-hmm. came out, and it had kind of really easy to understand, clearly done skill trees that mm-hmm. that really helped the player to kind of plan the whole character build from the start, when you could see that if I take this skill and then when I get my next point I will put it here, and then I will eventually end up with this skill that's the best that this tree can offer. Mm-hmm. It's basically along the same lines as what World of Warcraft has. Mm-hmm. So just a really simple visual representation of different ways to build the character and what the decisions will lead into. So those are kind of the things that I'm looking for in UI design. That what's the simplest and easiest to understand way to do something? Because it's not really fun, or I haven't ever come across a game where the fun element actually comes from trying to understand that UI element.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And one part of the UI design that I definitely have to bring up, and that will definitely have to be a Chirpy, the little bird Twitter-like interface that's at the top of the screen. I know there's definitely some interesting debates about both on the Steam forums as well as from my friends. Where did the little Chirpy come from during the design process?
we were originally thinking about a newsfeed type mm-hmm. of thing, because there has to be some kind of input from the or some kind of response from the citizens and a way to hear what they are saying, and we wanted to have it as text because that's how we did in the previous games, and it's kind of the easiest thing. We had so many visual things like icons and symbols floating that having the feedback come as something visual would have been too much of those things. So we wanted to have a text box that tells the player how the city is doing. Mm-hmm. And I think we actually started writing the news feed stuff when it was actually Marina who came up with the idea of having this bird who is like Twitter but not Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Hans, our creative director, made the bird icon in just a few minutes, and it was perfect. I love the thing because it's so modern. It kind of brings the game to modern day instantly, and people understand it really easily. And even the people who don't really like it, it's more about that it's the only character in the game. Mm-hmm. It's the only one who actually has a face. There are no people that you can actually look at. Like mm-hmm. the citizens are so small that you can't really kind of work with them anyway. So Chirpy is the only one. So he's taking all the heat because he's the only person in the game.
Yeah. I think it's great about having that feedback, as you say, of being able to see at a glance, you know, how your citizens are reacting to your city. And it's a great way to get those alerts, like if your water is not going to the right place. And it just really acts as another, like a secondary UI in a sense, to let the player, or secondary feedback system, to let them know what's going on.
Yeah, and we also made it so that the citizens have all kinds of opinions. So you would think that if you place some really polluting coal power plant or something, that people would complain. But then the messages that come up are that some are complaining, but other people are like, coal power is just my thing. And it's like, because it's the player's choice, and it's not our place to tell them that this was a bad choice. So they will get all kinds of comments from the citizens.
Yeah. Now, to begin wrapping things up for this cast, one question that I'm really interested in, Carolina, is considering, as you said, Cities Skylines has been in development for 2 years, you guys do have a long wish list of features that you would like to add over the coming months and so. And one thing I'm curious about is one thing I like to ask a lot of our developers to come on. In terms of the game, as you said, you guys did a lot of things great with Cities Skylines in terms of the design philosophy. From your perspective as the game designer on it, Were there any elements that you felt you could have done a better job on, or, you know, the whole hindsight is 2020 type situation?
The thing that I would have liked to do differently is the metro system. Mm-hmm. That was mainly down to the fact that I was sick for a long time. I had pneumonia. How do you say it? The lung disease. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was ill for a few weeks, and the guys had done it while I was away. Mm-hmm. And that's why it didn't happen the way I had planned it. And the way I would have loved to do it is so that it would actually create this like a underground map type of visual feedback, that you would have just placed the stations and they would connect with lines automatically, and more of a abstract way of doing it, because now you actually dig the tunnels and all of this, and it's working nicely. And with the tunnels we are working on now, it actually works better than my solution. But I would have loved to have this virtual metro map floating on the cityscape. Mm-hmm. So maybe one day I'll make a mod that does that.
Cool. All right. I know there's definitely a lot we can talk about. There's so many topics just in terms of general city building design. But for those of you listening, Caroline is in Finland, and that is an 8-hour time difference between her and I. So we're going to start wrap things up. But I definitely would love to talk to you again, Caroline, in the future. Because as I said, there's so many more topics we can get into about this.
Oh, yeah. And I love talking about games. So
yeah, me too. All right. So to wrap things up about City Skylines and Colossal Order, I just want to touch a little bit on the future of the game. As we said over the cast, you guys definitely have a wish list of things you'd like to add on. You've mentioned that tunnels are going to be coming in a few weeks, at least a few weeks from the time of this podcast recording. And as we've talked about over the interview, your publisher, Paradox Interactive, is definitely known for supporting their games with post-content support, DLC, and the like. In terms of the future of City Skylines, can you give our audience any little tidbits or sneak peeks as to what are some things that will be coming down the line beyond just the tunnels?
I'd say that a lot of people have been, ever since when we first showed the game to reporters or journalists, people have always been asking if there are any disasters. Mm-hmm. So all I can say is that there might be in the future. But it's something that would be so much fun. I've already designed that we should have this poop monster, because everyone loves to let the citizens drink the poop water. So there should be this monster coming up if you give them too much polluted water.
That would be interesting. Yeah. Again, it's always great to watch how things either go well or go horribly awry in your cities. Now, one side question about the future in terms of adding content. I guess the question, I'm not sure how quickly phrase this, but in terms of keeping pace with adding new content to the game on your end, as well as supporting the modding community and letting them add new content, are there any interesting challenges or issues that you guys are running into in terms of adding new stuff to the game from your end versus letting the modders and the community add stuff from their end?
Well, there are always players who only want to use the official kind of content. So there is definitely some need for even the same things that have been modded in to actually appear as a full-fledged update or an expansion. Mm-hmm. So we have decided that we will be making the same stuff as the modders, because we can't simply keep up with all of the content or we'll change our plans continuously. Mm-hmm. And I think personally that what will happen is that when we actually release more features into the game, this will always boost the modding community, because they will get kind of new things that they can work on too. So even if the modders do some of the same stuff that we are working on, I think it will benefit both of us. Okay. And so far the only problem we have had is that some mods have touched the save files, and that made one patch only kind of break some saved games because they were done with mods that actually didn't use the same system as our non-modded game saves did. But this has been handled, so it shouldn't be a problem anymore. And with the first patches, we also did it so that if there was an improvement that directly did the same as a mod, like there was one mod that actually gave the players a tool to reverse the direction of one-way roads, and we decided to include a similar tool in the actual game. Mm-hmm. So we made it so that when the update is downloaded, it will automatically turn off the mod, so to avoid any conflicts. And we hope to do this in the future as well, but if someone just happens to release a mod on the same day as we make the update, then maybe that might cause a problem, but nothing too bad.
Awesome. All right, with that, I just have two final questions for you, Caroline, and then we will say goodbye for tonight. My last question in terms of the future for, say, Skylines is more about the DLC model that you guys are planning in terms of additional purchases or microtransactions. Are you going to be aiming for like smaller bite-sized content, like $1.99 purchases, or maybe like a new building type or a new feature like that? Or will you guys be planning on doing more like expansion level content, you know, like bigger, more expensive stuff that changes a lot of features in the game?
Well, I hope I'm allowed to say this, but we are aiming for bigger content patches and also small free updates. So because larger expansions that actually cost money are naturally something that not all of the players will get. Mm-hmm. So if they have something that we only want to have in all of the expansions, we will take that part out and publish that as a free update so that all of the players get it, and then we can use the same system in all expansions. But we are not definitely not assuming that all of the players will buy all of the expansions. It's their choice. What kind of extra content will they want to have? Because it's their game, and they can choose what they want to play more with.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. With that, my final question then for you tonight, Carolina, is do you have any final thoughts or anything you would like to say to the fans listening to the cast right now?
Well, I've been personally really happy with the reception the game has gotten, because usually with the previous games, the reason people come to the forums is usually to complain because, well, that's just natural that if I buy a game, if I have a problem with it, then I will go and ask for a solution, and this is how all the negative comments end up on the forums. But with Skylines, for some reason, people have been really kind of friendly and positive and come to the forums also just to tell us that they like the game. And I think that's really awesome. And for me, it's a driving force. Like, these are the people that I make games for. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be happy and tell me what they like about the game.
All right. I think with that, we're going to wrap things up for this cast. Again, I mean, we could sit here and talk for the next 2 to 3 hours, but I know that it is 8 hours ahead for you right now, and I'm sure it's definitely late for you, and you probably want to get home.
Oh, yeah.
So with that, we're going to end things here for this edition of the Perceptive Podcast. Carolina, again, it's been a pleasure talking with you over the last hour, and I definitely would love to have you back on to talk more about city building design and just whatever topics that interest you.
Well, it would be great to do this again, because the city building games are so interesting, really a unique genre among games. Mm-hmm. and there are so few of the games of this type that it's nice to find fellow enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. And kind of get to really discuss what these games are about. So it's been really nice to be on the show.
Thanks. All right. So for those of you listening, we're going to wrap things up here. And as always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. For guest pieces or being a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. To contribute to our ongoing Patreon campaign to secure some much-needed monthly funding to allow me to keep working on the site while paying those annoying bills, you can find that information under the Patreon banner also on the front page. And make sure to check out the Game Wisdom YouTube page, where I will post daily Let's Plays and live streams of games from Twitch. To watch those live, you can check out my Twitch channel under my handle of GW Bicer. Thanks so much for tuning into this cast. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you next time. Take care, everybody.